The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thanks for joining us once again. I'm God Calling. I am Paul Orlowski, and Brother Levin Harton is joining us. He graduated from Benedictine College and now is at the Benedictine Abbey in Atchison, Kansas. Brother Levin, welcome to God Calling.
Thank you for having me, Paul. It's really great to be with you.
Well, let's start right there. You graduated from Benedictine College in 06, I believe. Prior to that, tell me about your growing up. Where did you grow up? And tell me about your family life as far as prayer goes, Mass, things like that.
I'm from a wonderful diocese, actually, Wichita, Kansas. Is my home diocese, and they're outstanding for two things. One, they have a very strong presbyterate, a lot of good young priests, even in my childhood. And secondly, they have free Catholic education if you tithe across the diocese, which I think it's the only diocese in the nation that has that.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, it's wonderful. And so I grew up in a very culturally Catholic and supportive environment. But I mean, to be really honest, like, and I had wonderful parents too. My parents loved me, gave me freedom. Taught me to look for the good. But as I went through junior high and high school, just like a lot of people, the faith became much less interesting to me than girls, fun, partying, popularity, sports, et cetera. You know, all the stuff. You know, my parents, even though they gave me all the foundation, things much more fundamental than piety, like unconditional love is what I mean by that. They really didn't pass on piety all that well. To be really, really frank. Our prayer life mainly consisted of going to Mass on Sundays and praying before meals, and I knew these things were very important. But really being introduced to the Lord as my Savior, as someone who's near to me and knows me better than myself, loves me better than I love myself, I didn't really encounter that growing up. And so, you know, as I got older, I kind of wandered away and sought to find my joy and happiness in other things. Yeah, obviously that doesn't work. But my childhood overall, though, I want to stress this because I think it's important for parents to know the single best thing to do for vocations is to give your kids unconditional love and to give them the freedom and love for their destiny, independent of your desires. Because when you're discerning a vocation, your freedom is so important. Freedom is so paramount. And to bring a kid to adulthood to be really free will set them up to enter into any vocation.
Right.
if you have a... You'd have the piety, the moral education, but if humanly they're not free, they won't be free to do a vocation.
I read an article where you were quoted and basically saying that your religious vocation was a surprise to you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, fairly early on, sixth or seventh grade, I really lost my interest in my faith. And my parents, you know, we really didn't have any celibates, religious priests, anyone like that. In our family, so the idea of being a religious celibate was completely off my radar. Never did it occur to me as a child that I would be either a priest or a monk. And you know, now as I get older and I live in a community life among other monks, it's a very different lifestyle than a diocesan priest. It's a very different calling than a diocesan priest. And so it makes sense to me that I never had an inkling of it because I never saw it. My home diocese of Wichita, very strong presbyterate, but there's not a ton of religious orders, and I never met monks, surely. So, yeah, Paul, on a more adult level, by the time I got to be 22, 23, and discerned this call. I had to clear away a lot of junk, a lot of accumulated bad decisions that really brought confusion into my heart as to what I really wanted. I didn't know that I loved to pray until I was 20 years old and kind of had a reversion back to my faith and found that I had not only a taste for prayer, but that I like a real hunger for prayer. And that was a complete surprise to me.
The fun stuff, the sports, the television, the whatever it is, the girls, they're all good and wonderful things, but they can be distractions.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it wasn't any of those individual pieces. And even like, I don't know, like I would sneak out at that, and I would go to parties. And some of that stuff, which I think could be really alarming for parents, when I look back at myself, a lot of it was me just asserting my independence from my parents, which is a good thing. And again, because my parents gave me unconditional love, none of it veered towards self-destruction. A lot of it was, again, just like trying to figure out my identity. But it was distracting. Like you said, I mean, it's a distraction from not from like doing the right thing, but from being serious about my desires, about how deep they are, about how much I want from life, about how much I want from relationships. If we distract ourselves with the trifles, we miss the really deep and beautiful things. Yeah, I think that's what I was doing. You know, it's understandable. The high school student, you're figuring things out. But as I got older, those deep desires asserted themselves.
You had a very funny line in this article that I read. You said, "My senior year, even though I was dating a beautiful woman, I found prayer more interesting than her." And that kind of cracked me up.
No, absolutely true. Again, very beautiful. She was smarter than me. She was very different from me. She complimented me and challenged me. I mean, like, really all the things that I could want to move forward in a relationship and be very serious, and discern marriage. But my prayer life at that time, my senior year, was just like exploding. I'd come off doing a summer of catechetical work called Totus Tuus, which here in kind of the Midwest is summer Bible schools where you go from parish to parish for 8 weeks, mm-hmm. teach kids about the faith, but you also have like a very robust prayer life, and your whole life is just oriented, directed toward God. And it was like, it wasn't that I was like having the most fun of my life, but I was stunned that I could do this and I could find meaning and just that I could do it. Mm-hmm. Really, that I could live such a rigorous and ordered life. And it really kind of said, like opened up new desires in me. It made me aware. So when I came back my senior year, I carried in that discipline and that order to my life toward opening myself up to nearness to God. And that just like became paramount. It became like the dynamic, the anchor of my days. And so when I saw the girl was really beautiful, but I'd want to go pray. I'd want to be with the Lord, and knew in some way that like celibacy is a call, virginity is a call that leaves you open to the divine. You know, many world religions acknowledge this, right? There are celibates in many world religions. So Christianity is another one that acknowledges that virginity. There's something mystical about it. There's a mystical invitation behind it. Somehow I intuited that, giving myself entirely to prayer. And so when I looked at the girl, she was beautiful, but she wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Brother Levin, stay right where you are. We're going to come back on God Calling in just a couple of minutes here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Brother Levin Harton is joining us here on God Calling. Brother, how important was it to be at Benedictine College, because the St. Benedict's Abbey is right there, and you went from one to the other. So you had examples constantly, I believe, on campus of religious life.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, pivotal for me. Okay. And for me, I mean, in a very specific way, we monks take a vow of stability, right? So being at the place where this vocation is, living there, seeing the good ministry of the monks, experiencing the draw to a community life, the likes of which I really hadn't experienced growing up, was tremendous for me personally. I think more generally, though, for young people in college is a time where we're really, again, standing on our own two feet as persons. In our society views college that, you know, the child leaving home, going to college, 18 years old is when you're a legal adult. We view ourselves sociologically as adults and ready to be self-determining at that age. And so at that moment when we're supposed to be adults, you know, but we're often not ready for that, having people in our lives who can call us on to be aware of our hearts more deeply is so important, I think, for any college student. But yeah, again, for me, for my vocation particularly, being in the presence of the stable, committed life in the monastery, yeah, that was a pivotal, of course.
How important, you talk about stability and an order to life, how important is it then living, as I'm sure you do, the Benedictine life?
When people think of religious, they think of, if they're, you know, particularly informed, the evangelical councils, chastity, poverty, obedience, the three vows that religious take. Well, the monastic vows predate those vows by 600-700 years, and so we don't take those vows. We take a vow of stability, conversatio morum, and obedience. Now, conversatio morum means being faithful to the monastic manner of life that's been lived for centuries and centuries, and that's always included not being married and not having your own private property, having poverty, right?
Right.
But that fourth vow, I guess you could call it, of stability, is the unique one. And that basically means that we live in the same place for the whole course of our lives. If you were to join a Dominican community or Franciscan community, or you're in the diocesan priesthood, you know, you have your formation years spent at one location, maybe two, and then you go on mission. You're in mission maybe four or five places over the course of your life, seven or eight, whatever. And then you know, typically have some place where you retire in community or not. So over the course of your life, you're really on mission with the Lord, you know, 10 to 12 homes, so to speak. And there's not really a home. In the monastery, though, it's all in one place. From the time we enter to the time we die, we live this vow of stability in this place. Further, the brotherhood and the fraternal life is stamped by that stability, right? And so you know that any brother with whom you have a conflict is never leaving. You know, it's a lot like marriage. It brings everything to the head to make a decision about living together well and with love. And on the other hand, you have this wonderful opportunity to grow, like, you know, with peers. I have a couple peers who are my age, and we've been in the monastery for 15, 17 years now. And to see each other go through seasons of life and friendship that deepens through that vow of stability is a wonderful gift. But the vow has a juridical or like kind of canonical meaning of having one home, but it also has a spirituality of living deeply in one place together with people deeply.
You've talked some about, you're the vocation director, but you've talked some about a lot of things out in the world that are causing the destruction of the family. And that's where we, I think, first get our first feeling of community is in the family. And tell me about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so just on a personal level, feelings of your experiences of community, I'll just say one thing about my personal experience on that. I mentioned that, you know, when I came to Benedictine, I experienced this like broader community life, including the monastery, including the town, including the college environment, just a wonderful community life. But growing up, my parents had two families that were friends that would come over literally every Sunday night through the course of the year for Sunday night dinner. And so we would do that every week. And that was my first introduction, I think, and my first taste of like a solid and perduring community. Because, you know, I knew that, again, if I got into a fight with any of the members of this one family, you know, my parents weren't going to stop having them over. You know, they would be back next week, or we would be going over there next week.
Right.
And it was a consistency that I found really beautiful that not only, again, taught me how to live with other people, but like got me out of my own family unit, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really healthy about mixing with other families. So, you know, yeah, in the broader culture, that's compromised by so many things. Yeah, so many things.
For sure.
I'm sure you could have whole shows on that. But, you know, one of the things that I think is just crucial is kind of what I was talking about, having connections that aren't fleeting in that last year after year. Really, the word I'm looking for is preferring company. I think, you know, we can think of preference as like, you know, I'm a Christian, I should love everyone, for sure, to be sure. But for families, for individuals, you know, friendship is a gratuitous gift. You know, we can't force anyone to be our friend. Friendship blossoms and flowers from a living Christian charity and then discovering a likeness that is mutual and that is beautiful. And God gives us friendships. God gives us communities as a gratuitous gift and a sign of Trinitarian love. And to live that well in our local community is just vital for Christianity. That's a Christian way of living in the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And all the societal challenges that come, we can do that with other people and find anchor there.
Sure. Your vocations director, what is your strategy in reaching out to young people and sharing this message that you've discovered?
Yeah, thanks for asking. The monastic life is unique because You know, we live this vow of stability, this ordered, regular day at home in the monastery. And so unlike a Franciscan or a Dominican or a diocesan vocations director, I'm not traveling about and, you know, presenting the life and engaging people really all that much, just a very little bit. And I try to be strategic with it, because to go outside of the monastery and then tell people about things in the monastery is rather incoherent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so our ministry at Benedictine College is really helpful, because we're right on campus. You know, I can go out during my work period in the morning or in the afternoon, and I can have conversations with guys. We can host retreats, or we can do talks on campus. We can engage. We have a discernment group here on campus that we engage. So we have young people that are nearby for us to focus on. And then additionally, I'll do, like I said, just very few talks out and about. And we try to have a good web presence, too. We have a website, kansasmonks.org, and we have a vocation site, monkvocations.org, both of which we've been diligent about hopefully having a good social media and internet presence that gives people a taste of what our life is like, so that we can invite them to come and see their life.
Can I stop you right there? We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you right after these messages on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Brother Levin Hartin is joining us on God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. Brother, you were talking about, you know, reaching out to folks, and something else that I read that you said, I think, is very interesting, in that we must desire Christ first. That really gets to the core of all vocations, I suppose, but certainly a religious vocation.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. You know, so my monastery has been around since 1857, and we've gone through ebbs and flows of vocation. In the 40s, 50s, 60s, like a lot of places, we had a huge vocations boom, but like a lot of places, we had a lot of monks leave, and a lot of people who remained in the life who probably weren't that happy. And I don't know, like the wisdom of being in a community that's been around for a long time, it's clear to me that first of all, the person's freedom in giving themselves an agency in doing so is so important, so that they can become fully alive in what the Lord has asked of them. And then two, that the only adequate motive, the only adequate reason for being a religious, for being a celibate, is love of Christ and the event of Christ occurring for me. That Christ has come into my life, it's clear to me. And I have built myself on that, and I follow him step by step, day by day. Not perfectly, of course, never, no one perfectly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he really is the only adequate reason. I mean, you can't get married because you like the in-laws. You can't get married just because you want to be a father. You have to get married because you first love the person in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And celibacy is the same way. And, you know, some of that, the being the bride of Christ is much easier to latch on and understand for women, but there's something very true for it about men too, that we prefer Christ, and we prefer this intimacy with Christ first.
Your slogan, quoting Pope Francis here, is "Wake up the world." What does that mean to you?
When we put together those flyers, this was a few years back, but I think it's probably rooted in my personal experience. What I mentioned earlier is that I had desires that I did not know that I had, and I think this is true, and it's getting more and more true with the technological revolution that's gone on. I think. I think that more and more people are being invited by the marketplace to be distant and alien from what they really want, because, you know, if they stay connected to their phone, if they stay connected to the technology around them, there's money to be made. You know, the algorithms that determine what comes up on our feed. I mean, all of the apps, all of the infrastructure of the internet going into the smartphone is built to keep you locked into something that will generate income for someone.
Certainly.
The way that our society is built on technology is risks alienating us from our heart. So waking up the world for religious, for priests, Pope Francis was the one that came from, for Pope Francis. Our goal is to bring people back to their hearts and to what they most dearly want. Because if we take that very seriously, the only answer will be God. That is, the parable says, the foundation of stone that won't slip away.
I read that in Atchison, some parents have reached out to your order to come and talk to younger people in 5th, 7th, 9th grade, things like that, which tells me that the community is embracing what you have to say.
Yeah, no, Atchison is a wonderful place. I think it has been, and it's becoming in the past 20 years. One of these small towns, maybe like Steubenville in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
Like Ave Maria down in Florida, you know, these different little, like, kind of places where people prefer, as I used that word earlier, prefer a Christian community that is taking very seriously the call to live well and to live evangelistically. We have tremendous support in our community, so it's a real joy.
You've been talking to many people. Again, some more of my homework here, that there is something like 50 people, young college-age men, in discernment. They were thinking about it, and that's the key right there. A lot of it, I guess, through some retreats and some of the outreach you've done.
That's true. Yeah, and 50 would mean probably just a very broad interest. And I mean, of those 50, I think maybe 10 to 15 would be, you know, persevering seriousness. And of those 10 to 15, 3 or 4 would be, you know, guys that I'm really accompanying.
But they're thinking about it. That's a good thing. That's a great thing.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of places across the country that don't have that level of interest. But yeah, it's a gift. And if we're faithful to our lifestyle, people will notice. If we're faithful to what the Lord gives us, He will bless us.
Since 1976, Catholics, the practice of National Vocation Awareness Week has been ongoing. Do we need to pick that up?
Thank you for asking that. I think in creative ways, yeah, that's, these national efforts can be really striking. You know, one of the most striking events that I've been a part of is the Focus National Conference, SEEK. I don't know if your listeners have heard of that, but they had one just past, I think, January in St. Louis. I didn't go to that one, but I've been to previous ones. And those events are where they have, 15,000 college students come to a city to be formed in the faith, to become, more missionary disciples, mm-hmm. the Lord. And the liturgies are just like incredible events, because you have these huge warehouses, that are like set up to have mass, and Focus does just a wonderful job doing it well. And so for any young person who goes there, you're just surrounded by a crowd of witnesses, And so something this big, and I hear it time and again from our students who go to the Focus conferences, how impactful the liturgies are. So these big ticket items and these national items have this ability to make an impact and an imprint on people. And those are very important. And then local communities, a reciprocal effort as well is important.
Do you think there is a vocation crisis? I've heard that term thrown around quite a bit.
I would want to give a nuanced response to that. That'd probably take a little bit of time, but my answer is yes. But I think that the nostalgia, again, of the 50s and the 60s, 40s, that many vocations, I really think that was built on sand.
Okay.
Based on the personal testimonies of my older converts who've gone to the reward, and if we look at the fruits of that, what happened in the 60s and the 70s by clerics and by religious, a lot of negative things, right?
Sure.
A lot of confusion, a lot of people leaving, the scandals. I think that an appropriate way forward is for the church, yes, to embrace and to have joy with vocations, and really to draw more and more young men and women, helping them see themselves given by the Lord a call, but then to accompany them well in making that commitment.
I have to close. We've only got about 30 seconds left, but I have to ask about the peanut brittle business.
So that's something I started when I was a junior monk, and we kind of slowed it down. So we only do a few tens, like a couple hundred around the holiday. But we do make peanut brittle, and it is tasty, I'm told.
What's it called?
It's called Benedict's Brittle.
I have to look for that. You can find anything online, I suppose, but in any case. If somebody wants to learn more, how can they contact you or the order?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So my particular community is St. Benedict's Abbey in Ashland, Kansas. Again, we have a website, kansasmonks.org. And then our vocations website particularly is monkvocations.org.
Brother Levin Harton, thanks for joining us on God Calling.
Thank you so much, Paul. Blessings.
We hope our listeners will listen each and every week at this very same time as well, right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations, from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. If you miss any part of today's program or you just want to listen again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.